You think Dane Cook has a rug these days? I bet he does.
Probably.
One that stops all the screeching from the parking garage.
Mm.
That's a classic bit.
A classic Dane Cook bit.
Say yourself, you like Urban Outfitters rugs.
I do. I think they have good cheap rugs compared to an IKEA rug.
I haven't walked into an Urban Outfitters in a very long time. What do they have there? I imagine it's like
mesh
vinyl records.
The baggiest pants you've ever seen.
Rugs, apparently.
What are those kids wearing these days, Dan? I don't even know.
You know what Urban Outfitters has? It has this like white porcelain chair that's shaped like a hand.
No.
Have you ever sat in a hand?
They have that there?
They have these round rugs that look just like a 8-ball from billiards.
like Putty's jacket from Seinfeld?
Are you describing the set of Mork and Mindy right now? That's what it sounds like to me.
Are you a Morkman, Dave? I've literally never seen a second of Mork and Mindy.
I remember it from when I was a kid, for sure.
Was that a Nick at Night?
No, it was on like Cindy. It was on network when I was a kid, I think.
No,
my sister watched it.
Well, she watched a lot of weird things, I imagine.
It was like the most popular show on TV.
That Mork,
he's so funny. Rainbow rainbow suspenders with hands on the ends.
Nanu nanu baby.
Yeah, that's right. Nanu nanu.
Hello and welcome to episode 272 of Dive Down, a Magic the Gathering podcast focused on the latest decks, trends, and strategies for the casual spike. My name is Stanislav, here in Chicago. And with me on the line from Denver, Colorado, it's the one and only Shane Beeps. Shane, I played my Shane tokens at RCQ over the weekend.
Really?
Did
you play like that land that makes spirit tokens, or are there other things that make them now?
Yes, I
cycled more land haunt.
No, I used a Sokenzen.
Right,
I cycled a Sokenzen.
Oh,
to make 2/1/1 hasters, and someone saw my tokens and said, "Is that Shane Beeps?"
No,
I swear. Jonathan, yes. Shout
Cam.
Out.
Was it Cam?
No, it was Jonathan. F.
Oh, hi, Jonathan F. Thank you for noticing me.
Yes.
Thanks for noticing me.
Doesn't sound like you have haste.
No. I honestly, if there was one, I mean, the token does not have haste. It's just a flying spirit. 1/1.
Right, I don't even remember if the Shane token.
Do you have haste, Shane?
No, I have menace.
I was going to say, pick your keyword. I have prowess.
I have trample.
Okay. I have horsemanship.
Of course. Where well known.
Flanking. I don't even know what flanking does.
I know who knows what flanking does. It's the godfather, Dave Harbarger.
Sure do. When a creature blocks this creature, it gets -1/-1 until end of turn. That's what flanking does.
Wow. Isn't it creature without flanking?
I think it is creature without flanking. Yes. Yeah. But powerful mechanic. Get those Sukata Lancers. You know what I'm saying?
And always here to correct Dave's failing memory. It is, of course, Devin O'Donnell, a.k.a. Doomwake on Twitch.
Doom. I mean, my memory...
Still spelling it with zeros?
Yes. My memory is also fading quickly, so gotta get this episode over with.
Well, what's surprising is that I don't think you played when these cards were new, right? So you used to have, have a better overall card knowledge than David Harbarger.
I didn't play when these cards were new, but I played a lot of flashback drafts on Magic Online, which they used to have like at least once or twice a month where they would just bring back a random old set. And I used to play a lot of those.
Yeah. Devin is sharing the leaderboard top position Pioneer right now on trophies. If anybody's noticed, he's here recording with us. He's losing status right now as he's recording with us.
By the end of the episode, somebody else will get a trophy and it'll be over.
Yeah.
We're finally having some podcast clout through Doomwake.
I think we've always had clout thanks to our lovely sponsors at Heavy Play. They improve your gameplay and your game day with their card game accessory brand. It's incredible. They have playmats, they have deck boxes, they have cards, sleeves with enhanced ergonomics designed for mobility and protection. And their Equip Mag system allows you to magnetically attach dice bundles to deck boxes to your playmat and you can carry it all around with one hand. They may be at your LGS soon. If they're not there already, make sure to ask for them by name from the manager, who will, I'm sure, will contact a distributor, and the distributor will be like, I'll try to get you heavy plate, but they're in very high demand. And when you can't
get you one case.
Yes. And if you can't find it at your LGS, you can certainly find your heavy plate product at heavyplate.com. And you can even get a discount with promo code thedivedown2024 for 10% off your first order.
What's your favorite color of heavy play? Don't all answer at once.
Artificer Black. Gray.
Very exciting, Stanislav.
I like Warlock Black, right? Isn't that what that one's called? That's what all my stuff is black.
I miss the Warlock part, but I like the black ones.
Yeah.
I mean, the gray playmat really is my favorite, but my deck box and dice boxes are all different colors because I like to mix and match my modular systems.
I do like the gray playmat because then anything you throw on it is now accessory. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It lets it pop. Mm-hmm. You don't have to contrast. You don't have to like be like, I'm purple for life with my playmat and now using something else looks odd.
Yeah.
The purple is hot though.
You know, everything I have is black. I got a black cell phone case. I have like 10 black V-neck t-shirts in the cabinet, all black.
You're wearing
all black
something heavy that's play. Pretty hard, like dark charcoal right now, yeah, I would say.
It's green.
Oh.
It brings out my eyes.
Logitech, get at us with your camera fidelity. What are we doing on this week's show, Stanislav?
We're doing a two-parter. Part one, NRG Minneapolis. I'm assuming it was in Minneapolis. It was certainly in Minnesota.
It was.
So I don't know what you're agreeing with, Devin. Minneapolis or Minnesota?
Both of those.
Oh, I said it was in, it was in Minneapolis.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Not in St. Paul.
At least one of the Twin Cities. Definitely that. You know why they're called the Twin Cities, right?
Because the Twins play there. Duh.
I was just going to say, because they're totally identical.
How far away are they from each other? Is this like a Fort Worth type situation?
I thought it was a Kansas City, Kansas versus Kansas City, Missouri situation where it's like a river between the two.
Oh, that'd be nice. Someone tell us. Someone who lives in that area, give us a shout.
Yeah, Sam will probably text me as soon as he hears this to explain. Our friend of the show, Sam, who's from there.
Yeah, he is. There are 7 miles between their downtowns, and both of the Twin Cities have their own unique history and flavor. There you go.
Wow.
So not twins at all, Stan.
I was wrong. My bit was fact-checked live on the air.
We blew that up.
All right, so then we're going to move along to talk about some spicy deck lists that have been making the rounds on MTGO and elsewhere since the release of Outlaws of Thunder Junction.
Yeah.
Slickshot, two formats, Demonic Tutor, somehow legal again, different but the same, more tokens than you can ever imagine.
I can imagine a lot of tokens.
All
especially
Shane tokens.
Shane spirit tokens. Yeah,
yes. They're all me. Just write whatever you want on them because they don't have a lot of use otherwise.
Well, I found it
needs some Shane monk tokens.
Mm. Monks and zombies, friends. Monks and zombies.
You know what monks do? They housekeep.
Mm.
The temple.
I was going to say have gratitude.
That as well. And we have a lot of gratitude for some new patrons to join the Dive Down Nation. We have TNN and James B.
We got Flex B Crunch today.
Oh, Flex B Crunch. New, just under the wire. And someone by the name of A.
Just the letter A.
Just A.
We got the first letter.
A. Yeah. Yeah. We all saw that happening. And if you'd like to join to support our Patreon, you can check us out at patreon.com/thedivedown. We had no increased tiers, no reviews. That's all fine. If you want to do that, though, go check it out. Leave us a review on iTunes. We appreciate it. If you want to support us without going to Patreon, you can go to thedivedown.com/store, get a hat, get a fanny pack, get a t-shirt. We got to come up with something new to replace the Rhino Boys, I suppose. Well, I guess we don't, because Rhino Boys wasn't banned. Yeah, a lasso, a hat, a cowboy hat. Yeah, so check that out at divedown.com/store. Mana Traders, if you would like to rent cards the same way we did for the decks that we tested this week, you can check out Mana Traders and use code THEDIVEDOWN, underscore K for L. That's good through the end of April, which is pretty much when the show comes out. K4L, that is, and you can get 10% off your first 2 months of Magic rental cards on Magic Online.
Yeah, you can also get Slickshot show-offs from them. Mm-hmm. I imagine they're pretty hard to find otherwise, I imagine. That is a good way to test cards as they go through the wild price fluctuations on Magic Online.
Very wild.
Yeah. I mean, Devin, I imagine that, you know, when you pop chests and stuff like that, you're always trying to see, like, you know, what can I sell for some tickets, et cetera, et cetera. And I've noticed that I feel like, you know, the Magic Online price fluctuations are pretty bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, the chess prices had gone down quite a bit before the new set came out. I don't know what the chess prices are specifically, but the new set definitely has helped them rebound a little bit, I think. But yeah, like I remember I opened quite a few chests before like the new set, trying to open cards and stuff. And I think the Synthesizer, which was the 3-mana artifact, that thing started at like 5 tickets. And then the next day it was at 40 tickets.
Yeah.
And now it's think back to like 15 or whatever. It's just all over the place.
That's the most expensive card in the set now, friends.
Is it?
$60 in paper. Right. Jeez. Now, I think, is what I just saw on Goldfish.
What? Hachi Machi.
Hold up. I think I have one. I think I got one in my pre-release box.
Now you got
box.
$60.
God, I could use it.
What, the $60? Yeah.
Yeah.
But you don't have to check that
right
now.
Have you seen
the cost of eggs? Yeah. They're a lot of eggs. Yeah. All right. Stan, you want to take us into the breakdown? You want to do this?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be happy to. So let me set the scene. It's Minneapolis, the Twin City, Minnesota, Saturday, April 20th, a normal day to play Magic the Gathering. Our friends at Nerd Rage Gaming, they're hosting their 10K Modern Open, and 237 players show up.
I like this table setting. I like where this is going.
So what I did in preparation for this breakdown is I downloaded the data from MTG Melee. I cleaned it up very lightly.
Deeply.
So there may be some people here who are real funny duddies who called their scam deck Rakdos aggro, and I've tried to catch all those fuddy duddies, but some fuddy duddies are too hard to catch. It's very nimble.
Can we talk more about, is it Boggles, perhaps?
Oh boy.
There's 5 decks marked is it Boggles.
I think legitimately they're all just scam. So
are they really
scam? I looked at one and it was scam. So,
well, there you go. So the numbers are imperfect, but they'll give us something to talk about, and that's really what we're here to do. The first thing that really struck me just by looking at the metagame from a high level is that half the field is like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 decks or so, meaning there wasn't one deck that accounted for more than 9%. And that was the most popular deck in the room, Domain Zoo, at least 22 copies, 9% of the room. Not too bad.
I think a lot of people are just kind of doing whatever the heck they want right now in this weird, because we're in this weird waiting room until MH3 comes out. So people, it almost feels like, I'm not going to say people aren't trying as hard, but they're not really like specifically trying to try new stuff, if that makes sense. It's this weird waiting period.
It's kind of the waiting room I want to be in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it's like, let's just play what we want. Like we talked about last time we talked about Modern, I think we talked about this as well. Just like, you know, it's the calm before the storm, but it's like, it's not that calm. I think we're just seeing like a decent amount of weird decks, people experimenting with some stuff, and more or less, this is, I think, a fun period.
And who loves fun more than we do? No one.
Nobody. It's true.
The next most popular deck with at least 17 copies was Amulet Titan, which was just over 7% of the room. And then rounding out the quarter mark, essentially, was Rakdos Scam, 15 copies, 6%. Domain Titan Scam, followed by the next deck, 12 copies, Yawgmoth. I think that's kind of what we see right now is probably the tier one of the format, if you were to ask me in the middle of the street, unprompted.
Yeah.
You wouldn't say that Is It Boggles is tier one?
I think it's really on the up and up, yes.
I'm trying to double check that one right now and see how many of these were, in fact, scam. Because if they're all 5 of them are scam would actually be the second most played deck, for what it's worth.
Yeah, or true. Or tied. Tied for the most plays.
Yeah.
Well, we'll let marketing figure that out later. After Yawgmoth, the next most popular deck, 8 copies, is Tron, followed by 5 Color Creativity. We see Esper Reanimator, Mono Black Coffers, Goryeo's Blink, Jund Creativity, and something called Is It Boggles, which I'm being told in my ear is some funny duddies referring to Scam after all.
It's different stuff. One of them is Coffers. It's different stuff.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I did preface that my cleanup was minimal.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And I regret nothing. The other thing I did when I downloaded the data was I tried to average out the win percentages of these decks just to get a sense for, among the most played strategies, who was doing best and who is doing least. I will say one of the most popular decks to not do very well at all is one Mono Green Tron, which had, by my count, about a 38.5% win rate.
Yeah, it has not been doing well since basically the modern Pro Tour, and yet people still keep trying. So more power to them. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're just getting their reps in on like how to mull for Tron before the colorless stuff in MH3 comes out. And I think there's an anticipation that it comes back. So you just got to really remember, like, what's my path to Tron here?
Yeah, and I think part of that is probably the, you know, sort of, I guess, resurgence in like Amulet and Scam, because those traditionally have not been great matchups for Tron.
The best performing deck that I was able to find with at least 6 copies, among the most played decks in the room apparently, was Mono Black Coffers, which was just shy of 60% across its 6 pilots.
Ooh, Coffers.
Burr.
Is that maybe because Coffers has a good main deck card to answer the Scion? Because it runs Shieldred's Edict, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think, reasonable against Domain Suit because of the Edicts, but then you also are playing a bunch of Field of Ruins to help against Amulet, and then I think the Scam matchup has always been like slightly favored for Coffers, mm-hmm. So it's like those 3 are pretty good matchups, I think, and then past that, you know, it falls off a little bit, but if you have like a reasonable matchup against the top 3, then you can go far with that.
Yeah, and it kind of has its own powerful proactive plan in case you just run somebody over, like outvalue someone, so.
Yeah.
I'll mention this again later, Dave, but as it turns out, Mono Black Coffers is not the only deck that runs a simple main deck answer to Scions.
Main deck, okay.
Mm-hmm. There were a few other decks that had really high win rates, but not as much representation. So among the decks that did best with at least 2 pilots was actually Azori's Control featuring Kahira with 68% across 3 pilots.
Yeah, it came in 8th and 9th place, by the way.
Ooh. Yeah. We also saw 4 Color Omnath do really well with 68% across 2 pilots. A couple of Merfolk players had an almost 60% win rate. Even Rakdos Goblins, 2 pilots, 58%.
Do you know that one of those Merfolk players is the one and only Nikachu?
Yeah, Nikachu was there. At least one other Merfolk pilot was there. And apparently they did quite well in the field. And Merfolk is one of those decks you always hear like the true head saying like, hey, I'm telling you, Merfolk is actually pretty good right now. But it never seems to bear out with bigger representation for one whatever reason.
I played against it in my testing this week, and it is not a deck I want to face.
I also played against it, and I also lost against it, so I understand.
Yes, I think it has some pretty darn unlosable matchups, or close to. And I think it definitely has some strengths. And I mean, like anything, like because it's so tricky, because there's so many like flash creatures and Aether Vial and things like that, I think that you can get a lot of play out of it with what you've got. And if you're not prepared against it, if you're not, you know, looking up what's a Merfolk deck list these days when you're, you know, playing on Magic Online or, you know, in real life, of course you can't do that. So you can be surprised for sure.
Yeah, and Tidebinder definitely gave like a whole new dimension to that deck before, you know, what it didn't have before. One thing, I'm looking at this this data, ladies and gentlemen, and specifically I'd like to, you know, talk to the Rhino boys. I'm looking yeah. again, and I do not seem to locate any rhinoceri.
Well, Devin, clearly you didn't read ahead the notes, which I'm glad you didn't, because I actually have a little section here, a bullet called, "Are You There, God? It's Me, the Rhino Boys."
Okay, we won't spoil it then. We'll get there in a second.
Oh, I think spoil it now. We're talking about it. So,
because I wanted to check in, right, on the deck that has
made the show
for
what
the
it
last
is.
2 years. Yeah. I was only able to find 3 Rhino decks, and 2 of them did not do well. However, there was one deck that finished in 22nd place with a record of 6-2-1, played by someone named Asuga, that went fairly deep with a very, very clean list that was kind of just like all the 4-ofs you would expect, except 3 Fire Ice. So maybe the dream's not dead if the representation were a bit higher. I don't know.
Asuga's flying the flag for all of us.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, the deck is doing something very, very powerful. And I would not be surprised at some point if, like, you know, I don't know if there's any other big events before the release of MH3, but I wouldn't be shocked if it just randomly had one last good weekend before the new set comes up.
Mm-hmm. That could be you, Doom.
Well, I mean, I win my FNMs, but
that's only the start of a good weekend, as we know.
True.
You gotta do some other stuff for it to be a full good weekend.
Yeah.
After the performance stuff, I didn't think about mentioning this when we were looking at it, but as I look at this pie chart of deck lists again, this is a really unusual tournament to me in that over 50% of the meta is other, which I would say is under 2%. I mean, frequently we have an other cutoff at 3%, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is a really wide metagame. I mean, maybe if we did a little bit of like data cleanup and consolidation, like Omnath decks or something like that, or got rid of the Simic Merfolk, we'd maybe be about 50-ish%. But that is definitely the kind of modern I like to see, right? I mean, I'm sure it's frustrating for people who are like, I want to prepare for a known meta and stuff like that. But I think modern is potentially at its best when you get to complain about having only 15 sideboard cards and not being able to prepare for everything. You know what I mean? And like when the top deck is only 9.3% with Domain Zoo, then I think it just allows people to enjoy the format that Modern gives us with this huge card pool.
Yeah, I think that's a really astute observation. I feel like we see this occasionally in NRG Modern Opens, especially like among the paper players at this level of competitive play. Something like Modern Pro Tour, I think, is a bit more top heavy. And even to the players who are like, oh, I just want to play against the top of the meta. I think the top of the meta isn't crystal clear right now anyway. We have the challenges online, but we just finished standard season in RCQs. Now we move to Pioneer season. Like, there haven't been a lot of incentives to experiment. So I think people are showing up with the decks they like, whatever they've had maybe for the last 5 years, because the format has been relatively stable despite shakeups and bans. And even this, like, post banning, the biggest, I think, up and comer perhaps is Domain Zoo, that largely benefits from Scion being such a powerful card these days. And we were seeing Domain Zoo before Scion was a card, and or rather before Guild Pack was a card. Now it's just better, and this is kind of the modern we've known and loved for a while.
Also, building off of this, we didn't mention this part either, because we just talked about a couple of the highlights of your win rate table, but there were only 2-3 decks in your top half of the meta that had win rates above 50%. Only Domain Zoo, Scam, and Coffers. Everything else was below 50%. Domain Zoo was at 50.5%. So that's also kind of interesting to see stuff kind of all over the place there.
Mm-hmm. And with the exception of Coffers, the other above 50% decks, like, barely squeaked it out. Scam had a 52.99%.
Yeah.
Give or take.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about this top 8, because there's one person in here that had a very, very good weekend. Mm-hmm. Dom Harvey.
That's the tax man? Oh, yeah. Dom Harvey.
Dom Harvey, who won the Modern Open and also won the Legacy showdown or whatever on Sunday as well.
Truly just a master.
Epic. Yeah. Total domination, as they can use that for their episode title this week if they want to.
Well, I believe Dom's in Seattle for the PT, so we might not even get an episode this week.
True.
Judgment.
Maybe after he wins Dominarius. The PT. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a fun story. Yeah, so Dom won on Titan. Probably not surprising. Not surprising that Titan was Dom's deck of choice, but
right.
He beat Joey DiGiacomo. DiGiacomo.
Mm-hmm. Close.
Was on Rakdos Scam. And this was, in fact, a rematch of Dom's only loss in the Swiss.
Oh, that's interesting.
In third place, Hi, I'm Pio, was their name on MTG Melee, playing Domain Zoo with Inti. And I hadn't noticed Inti and Domain Zoos before. I clicked around just to see if other people have been doing it. And it's kind of intermittent.
Yeah.
Intermittent. But I saw a number of people playing like one to, I don't think I saw anyone with four, but like a cascading number of Intis in their Domain Zoo decks. And I thought that was a pretty interesting include.
Did it look like they were replacing Wild Mikado with it? Because that's what I've wanted to do when I've played Domain Zoo.
That must be it, because having played Inti and Pioneer a lot the last 3 or 4 months, like, it's a great way to make your creatures bigger than bolts. And
yeah.
I wonder if that's kind of like it draws you into gas. It makes your creatures bigger, gives them trample. It does a lot.
Yeah. The other nice thing about Inti is it also, if you don't have Scion, it also can help give your Kavu trample. So that can certainly come up in certain spots. And I think I, like, akin to what Dave was saying, I think I've seen people not cutting Nicodle entirely, but trimming on it, going down to like two copies.
Yeah.
It's definitely my least favorite card that has, you know, maybe just sort of feels like a necessary evil. And I might just be of the opinion that it's pure evil. So.
But Nicodle?
Yeah, Nicodle.
Yeah, I'm not, I do not like that card either.
In that deck. I don't know if I like it at all, but I definitely have felt more strain around it than many other cards in the deck.
Yeah. All right, what's next, Stan?
In fourth place, we have Sam Ballou on Mono Black Coffers, looking pretty stock. In fifth place, Spencer C on Gruul Scapeshift. Not Titan Shift, this is Scapeshift, and this is our first instance where we have two main deck pick your poison in the top eight. And that's kind of what I was alluding to earlier. I think a lot of people are actually recognizing that you need to have a cheap answer to Scion. Pick your poison has three modes. You can probably find something to spend it on. And, you know, a number of players were running these main. Plenty more playing in the side.
Yeah. Very powerful card. I got to play with a lot for the first time testing this week, too. So good card.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the top three decks, like, does it miss anything? Domain, it hits Scion Leyline. Amulet hits Saga Amulet. Scam hits Fable. I guess once you get the Yawgmoth, it shuts off a little bit, but it's pretty good.
Good against ring decks, too. Like, Titan's got the ring. Escape Coffers has ring. Our sixth place finalist also had two Pick Your Poison main in their Jund Creativity deck. Probably good against Creativity, too, to deal with Archons.
Creature with Flying.
Yeah. Seventh place, Corey Baldrich on Golgari Yawgmoth. And eighth place, Raja Suleiman on Azori's Control featuring Kahira.
Raja, coming back for this season.
Yep. Energy Raja. Grinder.
Yeah, I got to do commentary for this event, and Dom just put on a hell of a show. Like, it just all weekend long. It was 22 rounds in a row that he just dumpstered people. It wasn't even close.
That's amazing.
You know? Jeez. Crazy.
Yeah, I was watching that go by on Twitter, and I was like, I hope he does it. That would be, it's great.
I have three more decks I just want to mention as honorable mentions.
This one's a little bit of a tease for what the second half of this episode's going to have in it.
Mm-hmm. And that's Ryan Overturf, friend of the show, on Gruul Prowess, featuring our first sighting of Slickshot Showoff. Ryan found all four ahead of this tournament.
Managed to
crack boxes. Lucky. Like a madman, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I did also notice that his deck was playing four copies of Wild Slash, which I did not know was a modern playable card. I figured we would probably run Unholy Heat since he also has Mishra's Bauble and Seal of Fire.
Well, let's get into that when we dive deep into Slickshot and Prowess in the second half of the show.
There's an important keyword on Wild Slash. My favorite
ferocious?
Keyword.
Is it ferocious?
It may be ferocious. It might just be two damage. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In 16th place, Braden Taylor on Azorius Hammer, featuring our first fun of Lava Spur boots. And perhaps a little bit more surprising to me, a Fomori Vault in their mana. Not a card we've talked about that I can recall.
No, that one seems a little interesting in Hammer. I mean, it is good in the grind game, but it's a little expensive.
Let me read this card real quick. So it is a land. You tap it for colorless mana, and it has an activated ability that says 3 generic, tap, discard a card, look at the top X cards of your library, where X is the number of artifacts you control. Put one of those cards into your hand, and then the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. This is maybe another in the long line of Hammer trying to find ways to add card advantage to their deck, right? I mean, Reality Chip was certainly another thing that people tried to do to get card advantage or change their plan where they were going to try to draw some more cards. So I think it's an interesting card to look at. It's kind of fascinating in the sense that, like, it's not like you can search this up when you really need it or anything like that. So it's just sort of like definitely a fun of, but it's a little interesting to see.
And then my last shout out, 21st place, AJ Franklin. Wonder if that's the former senator, on Mono Black Grief. No Coffers, no Karns, still playing 8 Field of Ruin effects and 3 Sunken Citadel. Just winning with Shieldreds, Black Cards, Liliana the Veils. I'm sure Orcish Bowmasters help.
This is the Mason list, right? The list that Mason won the SCG with, I think. Or at least it's got to be within it's one close. Or two cards of it.
Yeah.
That's good.
Guess what? Yeah, Black cards in Modern are pretty good. Thanks to Grief. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure the 4-1 ring help as well. So yeah, there we go. Energy. Another energy in the books. We're not going to talk about Legacy because we don't know anything about it, but Dom won on lands. Doom, is that a big deal?
Well, one thing that I will note about Dom's performance is I think it was round 2 or round 3. I was looking at the standings. Or like the previous matches, and he beat Storm on lands, which now people have told me that over, and I don't want to get anybody upset, any Legacy enjoyers, people have told me that that has been a better matchup recently. But historically, if you go back like 4, 5, 6 years, that used to be a close to unwinnable matchup for lands. And he beat it. And I was commentating with Mason at the time, and I'm like, Mason, he just beat Storm. He's not losing this event. And it turns out he didn't lose the event.
He's just on.
Nailed it. Couldn't happen to a better guy. Dom is one of the nicest dudes.
Agreed.
All right, Stan, thanks for taking us through the tournament. I think our biggest impression coming out of it is just it's cool to see a modern format that's this wide. And I guess we'll see what happens in the coming months. But we at least have 2.5-ish months, I guess, until MH3 comes out. So maybe we can enjoy some wildness for a little bit.
Wow, it's still that long, huh?
I think it's June.
Mid-June, right?
16th or something like that. Yeah. So it's about
mid-June
2 months
sounds
from now.
Right.
Yeah.
Pleasure is mine. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to play any new cards for this episode because I was preparing for a Pioneer RCQ. But I'm dying to hear what you guys have done because you managed to rent some OTJ staples, new staples?
New staples.
Tell me, are the staples new?
I mean, I guess we're going to go right into it. Here we go into the second half of the show, the dive down section. We're talking about a few cool decks, like Stan said, and we have several things to look at. The big thing that we're going to talk about the most, of course, is Slick Shot Show Off, because everybody was talking about that all over Twitter, all over everything this weekend. Apparently it's crushing in Standard. It's interesting in Pioneer. It's doing stuff in Modern. So we're going to start there. We're also going to talk about a Golgari Vampires list that Doom was playing over the week, a blue-white Geralf / Monastery Mentor deck in Pioneer. And then, Devin, I don't know, did you throw any other decks in the list that I haven't had a chance to look at yet? Or
it's the only ones that I trophied with so far.
Okay,
so.
Perfect. So we have kind of 3 things to talk about this week, but we're going to start with Slickshot Prowess.
Yes.
Okay. Is Slickshot Show Off everywhere? Yes, it is. Is it living up to the hype? Yes, it is. Yeah. So let's talk about what exactly that means. We're going to look at Modern first. Of course, you all know, given my past, that this was the first deck I wanted to try to play. Old Faithful. Is it Phoenix of some kind? So as soon as Slickshot was available on Moto, the screenshots started rolling in and everybody kind of went, wow. This card is powerful and fast. And plot really does a lot for slick shots. And why don't we just say, read the card real quick? It's a generic and a red for a 1/2 with flying and haste that has plot for a generic and a red. And then it has a triggered ability on it that says whenever you cast a non-creature spell, slick shot show off gets +2/+0 until end of turn.
Yes, this is very important. This is not prowess.
Yeah.
This is Kiln Fiend.
It's Kiln Fiend.
Yeah.
It's so Kiln Fiend hours.
+2 is twice as much as +1.
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah.
Well, if you think about it, instead of +1/+1, they just took the toughness and added that to the power.
Yes.
I'm fine with that.
Important thing for you to remember, it does make it like old tricks you could run with some prowess threats you cannot do with this one. Because you can't buff power or your toughness to get out of range. However, I think there's lots of reasons, lots of ways that this card mitigates that problem. Number one being you can pay for it and have it sit in an untargetable zone for as long as you like until you play it in your turn.
So my favorite kinds of zones. For no mana and
attack. Yeah, an uninteractable zone. Just have it sit there. But look,
is there a name for this zone? Is it just, it's like exile? Is it exile?
It's just exile.
Oh, okay. So it's in the exile zone. So it could be processed.
It could be processed.
Wasteland Strangler, baby.
Yeah. Bring it in. But really what Slickshot has done is replaced whatever curve topping threat that has been in many of these decks. And from what I saw, at least in the energy tournament that Stan just went over, there were actually three different builds that were out there right now. And so we're going to take a little time to talk about each one of those. But this is talking about replacing things like Sprite Dragon. It replaces Stormwing Entity in the old versions that nobody can play anymore. Even in some of the builds, it replaces Questing Druid, which had recently become kind of a popular card in prowessy builds and is present in some of these builds, but not present in some of them. So three of these decks in the top 50 of Energy Minneapolis. And so let's start with number one. Flavor one is Slickshot. Is it prowess? It's really it's teamer prowess, but you know, it's really, is it prowess splashing basically for pick your poison. And the person who came in with this came in 28th place, 6-3 record, Alex Pulaski. This is the most expected version. It's blue-red prowess. You get 3 pick your poison in the side. There's an Ancient Grudge and 2 mutagenic growths in this deck. It's the version that I played to start with. There's 2 Underworld Breach in this deck. And, you know, the thing that this does is kind of what everybody expects with Is It Prowess.
Dave, can I ask you, why do you think Is It Prowess is the most expected? Is it just because, like, kind of the heritage of the deck? Or, like, you know, because I think that there are options in Modern where it wasn't just Is It, you know what I mean?
Yeah, however, recently, anybody who's been playing prowess decks has basically been playing Is It by default or teamer. And I think that's kind of what it really is. It's either been Is It plus Questing Druid, or it's been just kind of Is It normal with red cards with blue draw spells, essentially. So I think that's why that's the most expected one for now. Anyway, now, Shane, I know you're champing at the bit. Because Orion's list earlier is what you played. We'll get to it in a moment. That was mono red prowess was definitely something that was popular, you know, three, four years ago. So, but it just hasn't really been since.
Yeah.
Okay. So for what it's worth, I think that this deck lets you have aggressive starts from Slickshot. It has access to powerful things like Bauble Loops from Underworld plus Bauble plus DRC, which is sometimes an interesting thing that you can do. Underworld Breach is kind of the card that lives in this deck. And then also you can recover, of course, with Expressive Iteration because you have one of the best draw spells that's in Modern right now. It's really solid. It felt like prowess. We were still playing this something very close to this deck recently. I do think that it definitely showed to me that this Slickshot is the 2-drop that kind of solves the 2-drop problems that we've had in prowess recently. And the question is just kind of like, okay, do you play 8 2-drops? Do you only play 4 2-drops like this deck was? And kind of where do you go from there? I went 3-2 in a league for what it's worth. I faced quite strange decks. Like I beat Enchantress. I beat Tron. I beat one other deck that I'm forgetting. Oh, I beat like a mono green stompy deck or something. Super old school. And then I lost to Merfolk and Murktide. So I lost to the M's.
Merfolk was tough for sure.
I have islands in my build, so that makes it a lot worse. So that's kind of like flavor one. All right, flavor two is, anybody have any other thoughts about Izzet Prowess before we get off of the normal one?
I think Tron is the expected free win. I feel like beating Enchantress is actually kind of impressive because they're a prison deck. So you must have been able to close it faster than they could get any lock pieces down.
Turn five kills very consistently. And I know that sounds a little bit slow, but this deck is running engineered explosives. I was like, EI is engineered explosives. No, it's running expressive iteration. And so I think that sometimes when you have heavy expressive iteration hands or even really any expressive iteration hands, you're really kind of moving from pure speed into card quality and maybe getting a little bit of 2-for-1-ish off of people. The way that I beat Enchantress, for what it's worth, is pick your poison, because I managed to put early pressure on, made it so they had to play Solitary Confinement very early, and then destroyed one of their creatures that was an enchantment, and then picked their poison and made them sacrifice Solitary Confinement and killed them. And so that actually, part of that was because of the speed, the closing speed, but it was really more because I was putting such pressure on the things they could do each turn, as opposed to them not getting the lock pieces or something like that. But nice. Interesting. I mean, it was great. It's really good. You know, Slick Shot, you play it, you plot it, it sits there until you're ready to go. I mean, there's not a lot more complicated than that to say to it. I do have some tips on playing Slickshot for later.
You just cast and they die. That's been my experience.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess my question is, like, how often are you casting it? How often are you plotting it? Like, I want to hear about that decision-making process.
I would like to defer that for 1 second.
Yeah. Let's wait 1 minute. We should talk with the other builds first, right?
Yeah. So, and I'm going to go through these quickly because we have to talk about it in Pioneer too, because Devin's been smashing with Slickshot Prowess in Pioneer as well. So there's also an 18 creatures build. This is another teamer prowess list. Was in 43rd place by Nathan Van Dinter. It went 6-3 as well. This is a pretty less stock version. It's still Izzet-y, but it's actually much more teamery in the sense that instead of having Preordain, this deck has Abundant Harvest, which is sweet, and a card that I used to play in like Teamer Phoenix on Arena at one point in time in Historic. I think it's a pretty interesting card and something that guarantees you're going to draw what you're looking for, right? Are you looking for a land? Are you looking for a non-land? This makes it happen. Only gets you one card, but hey, so does Preordain. The other thing is that this one has a couple of extra creatures. It only has 2 Soulscar Mage, but it makes space to put 4 Questing Druids in. So you have 8 2 drops and 10 1 drops in this deck altogether. And to do that, this deck cuts back on a good amount of interaction, essentially. So it cuts back on expressive iteration a little bit. It also cuts back on space for a bunch of Unholy Heats by having extra mutagenic growths. This was an interesting list to me. I haven't seen a lot of other people trying something like this, but it felt like it was going to be a lot more aggressive, but still keeping Breach. Okay, and then the last one is the Just Gruul list that we saw that Ryan Overturf was playing. 10th place, 7-2. So I will say one thing that's really interesting, if you look at this, is that the opponent match win breakers made a huge difference at 6-3, because we have 10th place was 7-2, 28th place was 6-3, and 43rd place was also 6-3. So it's only one win separating these decks from each other in some ways.
Yeah, this was the deck that I played this week. Actually, I just played Ryan's 75. It's very dangerous to play a Ryan Overturf deck because Ryan is extremely good at maximizing V style of decks. And like, this is the kind of thing that's like, it looks, oh, this looks so sweet. I'm just going to like do stuff and my opponent's going to die. And let me tell you, that is not the case always. You really have to figure out how to maneuver, solve the puzzle of this deck to maneuver like really tight wins.
Yeah. And Ryan has been consistently, I mean, you might remember from 2020 when he was on the show, was it 2020, Sam, or maybe 2021 that you and I interviewed him talking about Mono Red Prowess?
It was before MH2. That's for sure.
Yeah.
That's probably while Faithless Looting was legal, to be honest.
I think it was post looting, but pre-MH2. But so Ryan has always said that Prowess is a tempo deck and not an aggro deck. And a lot of the decisions that he makes in his list, and these are, this is very, feels a lot like him thinking, I mean, he's thought a lot about this archetype. And so he definitely has a specific approach to it, but this is totally different, right? So this deck has, it's basically mono red. It has Questing Druid in it. There's no blue. It also has Mishra's Bauble, but does not have Dragon's Rage Channeler. So part of that is because it also doesn't have Underworld Breach. And he's also not a believer in mutagenic growth, which is kind of, in my mind, there's a package there that is like Underworld Breach, Mishra's Bauble, Dragon's Rage Channeler, and mutagenic growth all are things that contribute to basically breaking Underworld Breach if you want to. Now, we've talked about this in the past, but the bottom line there is that those are free spells. You can cast them a bunch of times on low mana if your graveyard is full. DRC helps you fill your graveyard, all of that kind of stuff. So it makes breaches more powerful.
I want to talk about my favorite card in this deck.
Yep.
Commercial District. The singleton. Yes. The singleton Commercial District.
Love it.
Yeah.
It was so clutch so yep. often. And it's funny, like, you know, people were talking about these as sort of like cards that would be at their best in, you know, mid-game style decks, right? Where you can get some card selection. You can always hit like a third land or something like that. But it, when you have like two or three lands on the battlefield and you peel one of your fetch lands, which I believe there are one, two, three, like
lots.
Nine,
yeah.
Nine in this deck or 10, then turning it into filtering is just so nice. And I know that I'm not saying anything novel about the surveil lands, but wow, wowie, it's great.
I'm just convinced they are a one is good in any deck with fetch lands, and
like, it might be
the concern that is going to slow down your aggro starts. Like, I think here is evidence that it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel the same way about when I saw him have one in his deck. I was like, why don't all of these decks have a Commercial District in them or a Thundering Falls potentially? Like, it just, I guess it depends on which way you're shaded. Like, maybe the second deck we talked about can get away with a Commercial District instead, and the first one would play Thundering Falls. But there's a number of times that I would have liked to have that. One of the problems that people always have with Prowess decks is they make these draws. They have these openers where they don't have a creature. And so they feel like they have to mull. And so, which is not really the right way to play this deck, I don't think. And being able to have one more shot at finding a creature off of one of your fetch lands, I think is pretty huge, especially if you don't have something else to do.
And you get like some slightly interesting play options too with like Bauble, where, you know, you can put a fetch land down. Like, let's say you're, you know, mid game and you have too many lands or something like that, and you really need some action. You can play the fetch land, Bauble. If you don't like what you see on top of your deck, you know, you do the classic, you know, shuffle it up type thing. Then you could fetch for a Commercial District if you don't need the mana that turn. Because it's a Prowess deck, you're not usually acting too often at the end of your opponent's turn, so you don't necessarily need the untapped land. Then you get another look at another card. Mm-hmm. So it really gives you, like, you basically get a look at two cards that way.
Yeah, three, kind of, because you can fetch one away. Yeah, look at another point. One and surveil it, and then draw whatever is off the top in the worst case scenario.
Can you imagine Commercial District put a lava dart in the graveyard? That's what I want to do.
Sick. Yeah, I love it. It's a great move. I mean, there's other stuff in Ryan's deck, though, that goes way back to mono red prowess days. He is running four Mana Morphos. He is running four Crash Through. Do you guys remember Crash Through?
That card was great.
It's a great card in mono red list. Yeah, and I definitely would try this deck just to like get back in touch with some of this stuff. He also, I think the most interesting card, like Stan mentioned, that was in this list was a 4 of Wild Slash. Now, I think the reason that this card is in this deck is anti-ring tech, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's basically the whole thing. Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah, it's very easy to get your creatures up to 4 power on a turn where you're trying to Alpha Strike, and Wild Slash makes sure that still happens.
Yeah, it's set up a win against Valakut.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, you know, like they are rushing to their like turn 3 ring and they slap it down and think they're protected in the face of, you know, two prowess creatures. And then you can really go ham with like, I had a couple lava darts, a wild slash, and I'm doing damage to myself, putting them at three and then, you know, just untap and do some more damage with some burn spells. So, I mean, you know, of course it worked out perfectly, but that's the kind of stuff that you get the option to when you have access to Wild Slash.
Was the Wild Slash that much better at one mana than Stomp would be with like the added threat and going to face?
Yes. I mean, you can't play a two mana, you know, two damage spell in this deck.
I think you can. I will say that the second deck that we looked at had Stomp and Bonecrusher Giant in the sideboard, and I assume it's for a similar reason, is to try to have some kind of card there to answer. But I do think that Ryan was leaning hard into, I'm going to go face. You know, he had a Seal of Fire in his deck too, and he said it wasn't really about Delirium. It was more about, I'm deep on shocks. I'm just putting a fifth shock in my deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's at the point, if you're choosing to main deck a card like Wild Slash, you'd much prefer to have the cheaper option. But if you're going to the sideboard, then Bonecrusher Giant can make a little bit more sense, because not only is it good against the ring decks, but you can also bring it in as just kind of a grindy 2-for-1 yes, card against Scam.
Yeah. But Ryan has a lot of opinions that he shared on Twitter after this, and so I would suggest going and take a look at his Twitter feed. But he said, you know, he messed up. He should have had Gigantha in his sideboard, and he decided that that was a mistake in his build. He had it in earlier in the week, then he took it out when he actually played the tournament. He wished he had it in. He felt that it would have come in for the win in two of his losses. He said he would not play Seal. He would rather play Unholy Heat. He felt like Unholy Heat was more useful ultimately than what he actually ended up with.
Yeah, I can see that.
He literally said, don't get suckered into playing Mutagenic Growth. It's not good enough as a protection spell anymore. And otherwise, it's just a lava. I think that was me editorializing about it not being good enough as a protection spell. He said, it's just a lava spike with extra steps, which I think is kind of true, especially if you're not playing Underworld Breach. And he says, I hate Underworld Breach, basically. He says, Underworld Breach and Prowess today feels like Arclight Phoenix in the deck back in the Faithless Looting era. Situationally powerful and ultimately a different version. Do you guys remember he played Mono Red Prowess without Phoenix when Phoenix was still legal with Faithless Looting? He felt the deck was better without Phoenix. So,
yeah, I mean, Ryan knows what he's doing. I mean, I think it's Crash Through is the kind of card that I think is, you know, underrated by people who might play a deck like this. I mean, maybe not, but the fact that in against creature matchups, it's just a trump card. And then the fact that it's just a cycler is so important, right? The cycling is what you're playing this for.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, you need to dig to action. I mean, it's funny that we're talking about playing Prowess again, like people have forgotten how, but I honestly kind of had to remind myself, like, how do you play a deck like this? And I was never particularly good at it, right? But I think it's just kind of like, those are the type of cards that get you to wins. And I think in combination with something like Slickshot as well, and I'm sure you're about to talk about your experiences with it, Dave, is like having card cyclers, like full four Metamorphose, full four Crash Through, even kind of the faux cycling of four Bauble and things like that are very clutch for piecing together the hands that make the wins.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing in these lists the different strategies that people are taking to do that, right? This deck basically has 12 cantrips in it, right? The blue deck also has 12 cantrips in it, essentially, because it has EI, it has Mishra's Bauble, and it has Preordain. The other weird green deck that we had also has it. It has Abundant Harvest instead. So you need those cards that are drawing things. I think it's interesting that Ryan stopped by to basically be like, you don't have to play the blue cards just because you can, right? Maybe this deck is okay without EI, because most of what's driving people to play, well, it's two things at this point. Like when, for a long time, the Is It Prowess decks that were sort of limping along in the C tier of the meta were playing EI, and now they have access to Preordain as well. And that just feels like a really powerful card too. I will say, he in Twitter, I was reading more of his replies. I think that Mason Clark asked him why, you know, how do you feel about not having access to EI in your list? And he said, I've never felt like I've had time to cast Expressive Iteration.
This is where I'm going too. This is what I'm saying. It's like, I'm probably over summarizing it, and Ryan would have much more to say, but like, EI is not an explosive card. Do you know what I mean?
No, it's slow. It's really slow.
It's slow.
This deck is about explosiveness, and whether it's like, you know, just getting in under your opponent on like turn three or something like that and going wild. Or it's about getting yourself to board states where you can be explosive all at once.
Yeah,
I agree, and overwhelm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think this, I'll go back again to like the main thing that Ryan said that I do agree with about prowess, that I think people, it is a tempo deck. It's closer to playing Shadow than it is to playing Burn in my mind, right? And so I think once I started like adjusting how I thought years ago when I was playing prowess, once I like moved towards that mindset a little bit more, I had better results with the deck than when I was trying to just go, I'm just trying to like draw into a great seven and kill somebody on turn three all the time. It's nice that you have that ability.
You can't do it. You can't rely on that.
Yeah. And so, but the thing is, I do think that EI lets you get into a spot that is more resilient to certain things. However, even when I was casting it just now in this last league, I always felt like, first off, you have to really work hard to make sure you sequence EI the right way every single game, of course. And then the second thing is like, it does feel like a lot of times you're mana constrained because of using Lava Dart and things like that, that you don't have a chance to really get the full potential of casting Expressive Iteration.
Like for me, the Expressive Iteration I want is Seek the Beast.
Yes, because it's an instant.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's an instant, and it's
a creature.
Yeah,
and it's a creature. What does that one do again? Is that the new red-green one?
It's Questing Druid's
adventure spell. So you exile the top two cards of your library. Until your next end step, you may play those cards.
Yeah. So look, just to like move this along, I think all of these builds are pretty interesting. I'm definitely going to go and try the red green one, Ryan's, after this. I do feel like I want Questing Druid in my deck as well, which I felt like was missing from the list that I played. Honestly, I'm still favoring playing blue and trying to figure out a way to fit all of those cards into the deck, and maybe cutting back a little bit on Soulscar Mages the way that the other list did. So I think there's a lot going on here, but Devin. Mm-hmm. What's going on in Pioneer with this deck?
Remember me?
So it's very similar to kind of like the old Atarka red decks. And the list that I copied did actually contain Atarka's Command. But this is more like, okay, so Burning Tree Emissary, Reckless Bushwhacker, that package deal. You know, for those of you who don't know Reckless Bushwhacker, it's the Surge version of Goblin Bushwhacker that's legal in Pioneer. And, you know, Burning Tree is effectively a free spell that lets you kind of curve into Bushwhacker. So you have kind of the Prowess Core with Soulscar Swift Spear. And then you have the Burning Tree Emissaries, the Reckless Bushwhackers, and the card that kind of all ties the room together here is Breakout, which is kind of a weird card to be playing because I think a lot of people sort of associated this card as a combo card and enabling like Amalia and stuff like that. But what's really nice with Breakout here, it kind of acts as a creature and a spell where you can put a creature into play, but it's also still triggering your Soul Scars and Swift Spears.
Do you guys remember on the spoiler episode that I talked about playing Breakout in Prowess Shells or no?
Nope.
Okay.
I mean, that was Murders at Roll Carlisle the clip. Manor.
Yeah.
So we can't remember everything.
Bring the tape back, but I definitely did. Now, it wasn't my idea. I'm pretty sure I saw Frank Karsten tweeting about it. And then I was like, oh my God, it makes a ton of sense to me. But we talked about it on the spoiler episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as far as.
Thank you for having the foresight.
As far as the decklist itself, it's fairly straightforward. You know, the Soulscar, Swift Spears, the Burning Trees. We're still playing four Questing Druid. What's nice about it's Druid, it's kind of like this package deal where you have like Questing Druid and Breakout are sort of multi-purpose where you can, if you need a creature, you can cast Druid. If you need a spell, you can cast Druid. If you need a creature, you Breakout, which is also a spell for your other stuff. So it's like you have a lot of modal spells. And then Monstrous Rage is the kicker here. You know, you saw Crash through in the version of the Pioneer version that Ryan was playing. Trample is still important. People will provide blockers for your Swift Spears and Soul Scars. And what's nice about Rage is the roll stays on the creature. So even if you don't kill them the turn you play the Monstrous Rage, you have that roll trample for the following turn to have that like that second big push.
Yeah, this card blew my mind again. Like I had said earlier, I liked playing it in like the limited format, and I tried it in like Commander and it was okay with like my stupid Commander deck. But this card really blew my mind when I played Boros Heroic at Chicago and around the Chicago tournament, whereas this card is so good. So good. It's such a good one mana spell.
Oh, yeah. And then another nice thing about what's really sick about Breakout, specifically when you're playing with Burning Tree Emissary, is you can really high roll people. Like I played a game in the league where I 5-0'd. Obviously, you know, I got a little bit lucky, but you know, I went like turn one Soulscar Mage, turn two I cast Breakout, which hit a Burning Tree Emissary. Burning Tree Emissary gives you more mana to cast another Breakout. Breakout into another Burning Tree Emissary, and then I used the mana from the second Burning Tree to cast a Bushwhacker. It's just like, what is going on here?
So that was good. Like,
it's a lot.
Five damage from the Soulscar Mage, 4 or 5 damage from the Soulscar Mage, and then everybody else gets +1/+0 yeah. from the Bushwhacker. That's like, yeah, that's like 11 on turn two.
Yeah, and what's also really cool about Breakout is you have the option to put the creature in your hand or in play.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of reasons that matters. One, specifically the Questing Druid, where if the Questing Druid can't attack that turn and you don't want to just like play a random creature, you can just put Questing Druid in your hand and then cast, if you have time, of course, you can just cast the Seek the Beast half of it in the following turn.
Can I give you another case that you might do that? If you break out into a Slick Shot Show Off and you don't want to expose it to sorcery removal, because because then you don't have to cast it right away and you can't plot it when it's in a situation like that, you know, then you might want to put it in your hand. It might be more effective there.
Right. And just kind of like a more broad picture, there have been a lot of Slick Shot decks in Pioneer. People have trophied with like Boros Heroic. I've seen Boros Burn. I've seen Mono Red Aggro. I've seen people try Izzet. Like, it's all over the place in Pioneer. But specifically, the thing that draws me to green the most, and this isn't necessarily a thing related to Slick Shot, but green gives access to what I think is maybe the best sideboard card in the entire Pioneer format right now, and that's Pick Your Poison, which also happens to be one of the best sideboard cards in Modern. Ooh. Turns out the card's really good.
Yeah.
But the most, you know, similar to the Leyline Scion stuff in Modern, the best deck in Pioneer has turn 3 Vein Ripper, so you need to be able to kill that. And it doesn't have Hexproof, but it kind of has Hexproof, right? So Pick Your Poison, very good against Vampires. It has some other good matchups too. But yeah, I don't know. It's just when I played two leagues with this deck. The first list had a Tarkus Command, the second list didn't, and I trophied both leagues, and the deck has just felt phenomenal. And I did buy the cards for an upcoming RCQ. Hopefully they come in the mail in time, but I do plan on playing this at my next RCQ.
Awesome.
Why do you like Pick Your Poison and Pioneer?
Vein Ripper.
Yeah.
Get that card out of here. It's also really good against the Niv decks too, because they have like Beanstalk, Binding Fable. It kills Ledger Shredder out of Phoenix. It's just like, it's so good.
Yeah. I think this card is really amazing. The more that I played with it this weekend, definitely.
It might be like one of the best sideboard cards they've ever printed.
I agree. At least for right now, until we get something weirder for in Modern Horizons for Modern anyway. But you know,
who knows?
Drink this up.
Yeah,
that would be the name of the card.
Pick this up.
The same.
Humorous
logic.
I did want to give a couple of like quick questions about Slick Shot itself as we leave this zone, because Stan, you asked at the beginning, how often are we casting it? How often are we plotting it? I found myself basically always plotting it, right? Unless you happen to be up against somebody who's tapped out and you have extra mana to be able to pump it at the same time. But I don't know what you guys think about that kind of heuristic.
Did you ever find yourself in a position, Dave, where you wanted to just surprise your opponent with a haster and sort of just set up like, I need to draw to a position where I have like Slick Shot and a Lightning Bolt, or like, you know, or two extra spells, and just coming in the air and overpower like the board stall that they created for you? Because I ran into that a few times where it's like, I'm not going to get in on the ground, so I'm going to have to go in the air, and I don't want them to know I'm coming.
Devin, what do you think about that?
So I think it's really a lot of matchup dependent. I haven't played the card Modern yet, to be fair, but from my Pioneer experience, there's been like, you know, a lot of the common times when the red deck is in the play, that, you know, the black deck will just say play a black source and pass. They clearly have Fatal Push. Obviously, it's insane there where you just get to time walk them and plot this thing. So that's really cool. But like when you're playing a faster matchup, if you think about it this way, the difference between plotting it and casting it is one damage, right? So you have to ask yourself, how much does that one damage matter? And, you know, if you're playing against an interactive deck, the one damage probably doesn't matter that much. You know, you're not going to win or lose the game. Like in that sort of fashion versus being able to protect him the following turn. But if you're playing against a deck like Tron or Lotus Field or any one of these non-interactive decks, you just cast it because they can't really kill it anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I think the thing for me is exactly that. It comes down to one mana. I think if you have open mana and you have the pump spells in your hand already and you're pretty sure it's not going to die, sure, you can go for it. There's no benefit to plotting it then. And so there are a lot of matchups like that, like opponents tapped out, opponents hellbent, opponents on Tron. Like all of those things are possible situations where you might do that. But I think it's like 75% of the time you're plotting it, maybe more.
And the plot is powerful. Like it's, I did not, unfortunately, I didn't get a ton of opportunity, honestly, to like make a complex decision on like plot or not. And it's much,
miss that website, plotornot.com.
Right? Plotornot.com.
So, I still have my account.
I think this sort of gets back a little bit to like the conversation we were having around like Ryan's build of the deck, which is, you know, and I think also every build of the deck, right? Which is like maneuvering yourself into situations where you can alpha strike or, you know, do something over two turns or get yourself into a position where you do a ton of damage one turn and then you are relying on just a few top decks.
Top decking a burn spell.
Of which you have like, you know, 15 of or something like that, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. I do think there's a couple of things I would love to remind people here. And I don't remember if I mentioned this earlier, but you cannot plot a card that is an exile. Like, did I allude to this earlier? So if you draw Slickshot off of Expressive Iteration or mm-hmm. off of Seek the Beast, mm-hmm. the only option you have is to play the card if you place it in exile off of EI or get it off of Seek the Beast, right? Yep. So that's a little bit of a bummer because, you know, if you, it's just something to keep in mind. If you're trying to sequence things or like trying to figure out where to put cards from Expressive Iteration, sometimes that matters. The other thing I would say is, Devin alluded to this a minute ago, if you plot this card on turn two, you do not have to play it on turn three. Tell yourself, I don't have to play this card just because it's free on turn three.
Well, there was one situation in one of my leagues that I played where I was playing against Izzet Phoenix, mm-hmm. and my opponent was just like deathly afraid of tapping out, so I had three slick shots in my hand, and I just plotted all three of them.
Yes.
And it was like one turn where I was just like, okay, I'm going to cast three of these, two more creatures, and four spells. You're like, what are you going to do?
Right.
You know?
Now my board is wide and all has haste and spells. And so that's, you can build up forces like that for sure. But Devin, a minute ago, you said someone leaves up Fatal Push against you mm-hmm. and then you time walk them by plotting it on turn two and leaving the card in exile. I think that is so powerful. That is a thing that is at the nexus of why plot is good and why the plot cost on this particular card is so good, because it's so cheap that it's really getting to use your mana for something that's going to benefit you later without risking those resources is like gigantic. So don't rush to play it just because you have it.
Or if you have something else to do, and like say you have a Swift Spear and, you know, a Slick Shot in exile, and you're like, okay, well, I want them to use their removal spell on the Swift Spear. Maybe just play the Swift Spear and attack. Maybe they use their removal spell, or maybe they're too worried about the Slick Shot that they have to feel like they have to save their removal spell.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, so you make them have to make a hard decision, right, to try to figure out what they're supposed to do there. I definitely did that a couple of times in the league that I was in. And then the last thing I would just reiterate while we're leaving this section and, you know, going to talk about a couple of other decks really quickly is just reminding you again, it is a Kiln Fiend. It does not have prowess. So don't try to save it with casting a lightning bolt on your opponent, because that is not going to do anything.
But do try to kill your opponent with it with the +2. When you do your math.
With the flying +2. Yeah, exactly.
This comes up a lot in the Pioneer Heroic deck, because those decks are still playing some copies of Reckless Rage. Mm-hmm. So, don't do that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a big move with prowess cards and heroic cards is that. So, yes, you cannot use Reckless Rage with your Slick Shot.
You can cast it, but it's not going to work out well for you.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So, Devin, you had two more decks to talk about in Pioneer. You want to chat about them real quick?
Absolutely. So I know our listeners are very, very fond of the Sorin Vein Ripper package. So, you know, people seem to love that deck in Pioneer so much that we put it into a new shell. This one is Golgari Vampire.
If there's one thing I know, it's that you love. It's Golgari.
Sorin Vein Ripper. Oh, you mean Golgari.
Yes, yeah. And that.
I would like to say before we start, I did trophy a league in 2024 with the Gitchrog Ravenous Ride. So, you know, got that covered.
Sweet. Love it.
But in any case, the deck list is... So it kind of uses the same vampire shell where you have, you know, the Sorins and the Vein Rippers of the world. But the kind of the genesis and the concept of the deck was... sometimes there's a decent number of matchups like Lotus Field or something like that, where sometimes the Vein Ripper stuff is just too slow, right? If you're on the draw against Lotus Field, like your turn three Vein Ripper, you're probably just going to die before then. So elves give you not only an acceleration in those matchups, but also in the vampire mirrors. If they don't push your elf, then you can just do your Sorin thing before they do their thing. And that can really matter a lot. So that's kind of where you want the mid acceleration from. Green also gives you a couple of tools for some added consistency. We kind of hinted about Demonic Tutor, which we'll maybe talk about in a second. But the first one that I want to discuss is the Huntsman's Redemption, which is a card that got a lot of press and a lot of hype during the when Boats was really, really good. Unfortunately, Boats no longer playable in this format. But Huntsman's Redemption is a really good card because it's just a fine card on rate, you know, especially if you're casting it on turn two off of an elf. It's a 3/3. Maybe you sack the elf to go get something. Maybe you don't. And then, you know, I mean, if you're thinking about it from just stats perspective, it's 3 mana for a 3/3 and then 4 more points worth of stats. So 3 mana for 7 worth of stats over the course of a couple of turns. But what's really cool is it can find you Vein Ripper. Mm-hmm. So you can go, like, for example, turn one elf, turn two Huntsman's Redemption if you have a Sorin in hand, and then turn three you can go chapter two ability on the stack. You can tap the mana, the elf for mana before the chapter resolves. So you go elf, float mana, sack the elf, get Ripper, play Sorin, minus, put in Ripper into play. So that's really cool.
Gross is what it is. I don't know if it's cool. Oh, yeah. It's disgusting.
Another really, really sick thing about Huntsman's is chapter three gives +2/+2 and trample, right? Mm-hmm. Preacher of the Schism, which is a vampire that you want to play in your deck, in your Sorin deck, has Death Touch. Shieldred also has Death Touch. And on top of all of that, Sorin, the plus ability, also gives Death Touch. So there was a lot of situations where I would just have like two random idiots, right? Whatever. And then I would give them both +2/+2 trample. And then you just go Sorin uptick on one of them. And now I have my Vein Ripper as a 9 power trample Death Toucher. Like, it's just lethal by itself, no matter how many things you block with it. So that was really cool.
That's funny. Trample Death Touch is one of the most annoying rules interactions.
Yeah.
One damage. Okay.
Yeah. One person in my league, maybe didn't know how that worked, but in any case,
yeah.
The other green card that kind of gives you a little bit of added consistency is this Demonic Tutor card. I've heard it's a good card. What do you guys think of Demonic Tutor?
That's not legal.
Overrated.
So the card we are talking about is Pillage the Bog, which has been picking up quite a bit of steam recently in the Niv to Light decks. Yeah. Claudio has been championing the Niv to Light decks. I didn't put an example list in here, but they're basically, so what, let's read the card just for people who have not seen it before. So Pillage the Bog is BG sorcery, look at the top X cards of your library, where X is twice the number of lands you control, put one into your hand, the rest in the bottom in a random order, and you can plot it for 3. So why this is good is, again, your deck is really trying to set up A plus B, A being Sorin, B being Ripper, and paying 2 mana to just look at, you know, 6 or 8 cards is really good when you're missing one of those two pieces. With the elves too, you can also do this weird thing, and this happened a couple of times, where you just like turn one play an elf and turn two plot it, because you don't want to cast it on turn two. It's just an impulse.
Right.
So if your hand is like average to mediocre, it's probably better to plot it in that specific spot, because you can do other stuff. And then later on, when you're looking for a more specific card, that's when it's really good.
The fact that this has plot on it is super interesting.
Right.
Right. Because, yeah, you just put a down payment on it and then it's just sitting there and it gets around the, like, what's the bad tutor? The like 4 mana tutor. You know, like the one that they made, and they're like
from like M12.
Yeah, this is a fair card.
A dozen times.
It was an uncommon. Tutor? Yeah, it's like too generic and black. But the problem with that card is always like you pay 4, and then you go and get a card, and you can't cast the card that you got, right? But this, you use this when you don't need the mana for something else, and then you wait till the right time to get it, and then you have the mana to do whatever it is you wanted to do. So that's pretty cool.
So that is, I mean, that's pretty much the entire deck. The rest of the deck was just to kind of, for posterity's sake, you know, there's the Fatal Pushes, the Thought Teases are in the sideboard, the Pick Your Poisons in the board. There is some one-ofs here. Like, I played one Shieldred, one Gitrog. I think the Gitrog is kind of a meme, but, I mean, I wanted kind of, like, just a haster that I could tutor for with Huntsman's Redemption, and it was the best one that I could think of, and it's a new card, so figured give it a shot. I don't know if this is necessarily better than the traditional Rakdos approach. You are... So the big trade-off here, because I'm sure a lot of people have questions about this, the big trade-off, right, is you're losing the red cards. So you're losing Fable the Mirror Breaker and Bloodscythe Harvester. So you're kind of like your late game, if I don't draw Sorin, I can just do stuff with Fable Harvester kind of thing, and that's staying power. So you're trading staying power for acceleration. Mm-hmm. It's going to help you in some matchups. It's going to hurt you in others. So it really depends on kind of, you know, what specific metagame that you expect to play against. One nice thing about green, though, is, as we talked about earlier, Pick Your Poison, one of the best cards in the format. You get to play it if you play green. So that is another upside there.
Nice. That's awesome. You think you're going to try this one a little bit more, or are you you're leaning towards Gruul Slickshot for your upcoming RCQ, it sounds like, but...
I would like to play a Sorin deck, but I don't know if you know this, but Sorins are like $60.
Oh my gosh.
good luck finding those.
I will gladly send you the three that I have just to borrow, Devin.
If you want them.
Well, I'll think about that.
Yeah.
I do really like the Gruul deck, and I think I kind of believe more in the Gruul deck than I do the Vampires deck. I'm also, again, just not sure if it's better than like your traditional Rakdos shell.
Yeah, totally. I've been sitting on those since they were like, you know, $12, I don't know, $15, and now they're something.
There you go.
But no one really wants to buy them, and I don't really want to make effort. I'd rather you use them, my friend.
Gotcha. Well, thank you, Shane.
I'm here for you.
All right, the last deck that we have to talk about, surprising in a different direction. No green in this one. No red in this one.
No green. Blue, white, Azorius, as the kids would say. This is a Mentor deck, Monastery Mentor. I'm sure you're all familiar with that card. Veins. Yeah. We have, I guess, sort of the new Monastery Mentor. I think we talked about this a couple of times in the spoiler episode.
Yep.
But let's refresh the memory of the folks at home. It's Geralf the Fresh Fleshwrap. I can't even say it right.
Geralf the Fresh Maker.
The Fresh Maker.
Do 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 do. Ooh-wah.
There's another name that my Twitch chat has called this card, which we will not say on this episode.
Okay. But
in any case, it's 2/3 for 2 and blue. Whenever you cast a spell during your turn, other than your first spell, you make a 2/2. And then whenever a zombie enters the battlefield, you get a counter on that zombie for each other zombie that entered the battlefield under your control this turn. So, similar to Monastery Mentor, pays you off for casting a lot of spells, right? So the idea, this deck, I think, really started in Standard, where people started playing with like Monastery Mentor and Haughty Djinn being another like 3-mana big creature that pays you off for playing a bunch of spells. And they use like Helping Hand to get it back from the graveyard, Recommission. The cantrips are a little bit worse in Standard because they don't have Opt. And then Picklock Prankster to mill over, you know, help fuel the graveyard, find spells. But, you know, we get some upgrades in Pioneer. We get Opt, which is another cantrip that Standard doesn't have. And then, you know, just the best card in the entire format, Ancestral Recall, also known as Treasure Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
You guys heard of that card?
I heard it's good. It's interesting to see it in a deck that doesn't have Phoenixes in it.
The funny thing is, when I was looking at this deck list, I was like, why is Devin playing an 8-mana card? And I was like, oh, this doesn't cost 8-mana at all.
Oh, it's Treasure Cruise. Remember me?
Yeah. But yeah, this is kind of like the rule of eight that Dave likes to talk about a lot, where Monastery people had tried Mentor decks in Pioneer before, but they're a little inconsistent because the only thing that you had before to kind of reanimate and put into play with Helping Hand was Monastery Mentor. But now that you have Geralf, you kind of have more consistency. And honestly, there are some spots where Geralf is actually a little bit better. because so a thing that commonly happens with Mentor is sometimes you storm off and make a bunch of tokens, maybe you make four or five or whatever, and then you've used all your resources, your cantrips, found a couple of lands, and you don't have anything left over, and all you have is a bunch of 1/1s, right? But with Geralf, if you say make four or five bodies, each one of those grows exponentially based on how many tokens you made that turn. So even if you Geralf make a bunch of stuff and then run out of gas the next turn, you get to keep that stats for the following attacks. So It is arguably better in some spots, which I like about that.
Makes sense to me. I think it's probably better in most spots other than the fact that you can only play one of them at a time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I almost wonder if you want to just like cut down to three because he's a legend and then play like another otherworldly gaze just to like have more turbo.
Maybe.
Yeah, funny enough, I actually the list that I trophied with only had two picklock pranksters. That number should be four. Mm-hmm. I started with two because I was like, it's a 2-mana card. How often do I want to draw this card? And it turns out every game.
So how many leagues away are you from just adding four Phoenixes? Because you can.
Jeskai Phoenix.
Yeah. Too many creatures, Dan. Too many creatures. So there's another cool thing you can do with Geralf where, okay, so this might get a little complicated, but hear me out, okay? So you have Geralf in play, right? Geralf is your first spell for the turn. You then have 2 mana untapped, right? You cast a cantrip. The Geralf trigger, there's two separate triggers. So the first trigger is make a zombie. So the zombie enters the battlefield. The zombie then creates the second trigger that says whenever a zombie enters the battlefield, put a counter on it for each other zombie that entered the battlefield. Mm. You can respond to that second trigger and play another cantrip. The second cantrip will create the second zombie. The second zombie enters the battlefield who sees the first zombie, which now makes that a 3-3.
Right.
And then once you resolve the first zombie ETB trigger, that's going to see the newest zombie and you get 2 3-3s instead of a 2-2 and a 3-3.
That's great. I love it. As soon as you started saying this, I was kind of like, oh, I think I know what he's going to say. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
This is the power creep version of like only playing Young Pyromancer on turn three just to get another body out of it.
Right. Basically. Yeah. Yeah, basically.
So what do you think about this deck overall? Like you had some fun playing it. We talked about it when we were talking about Geralf as well.
Yep. Yeah, no, I like it a lot. I think that the addition of Geralf has really added that consistency, you know, that rule of eight that we were talking about. I did mention the list that I trophied with. If you're copying the list at home, please do yourself a favor. Cut two otherworldlies, add two more pranksters. Mm. That card's crazy. The deck does have what we like to call a Shieldred problem, where, I mean, Phoenix has the problem too, right? Like, if Shieldred goes unchecked against Phoenix, it's game over. They're playing Ops and Considers and Cruises. It's the same thing here. But we don't get to play Landing Axe, so we don't really have as many ways to kill Shieldred. So that definitely caused me some issues. There's two Get Lost in the main. I could see, honestly, just playing four, because, like, Shieldred is that much of a problem. And then, yeah, I mean, a couple people asked me if I think it's better than Phoenix, which, you know, I mean, if you look at the deck list, it's cantrips and cruises and ways to get stuff back from the graveyard. And it has a similar vibe to it, but I think it's quite a bit different in the sense of, your threats are slightly better against the graveyard hate. Like if people are loading up on hearses and leylands and stuff, your Phoenixes are never coming back. Like Mentor and Geralf are much better standalone threats than those cards. Mm-hmm. Maybe not specifically Crackling Drake when you get into that the sideboard games.
Yeah.
Yeah. Overall, I do like the deck quite a bit. I'm not sure if I would necessarily like take it to an RCQ. I think it needs a little bit more work, but the power level is definitely there. And, you know, Treasure Cruise is a messed up card. Obviously, I don't need to tell you that. But I do like the fact that it grinds very well. Like, yeah. One thing that I've noticed is it just, like, plays through so much stuff. Like, the combination of Mentor making tokens along with Geralf and Cruises, and you have so much late game in this deck.
Yeah, this looks like a blast of, like, an FNM, you know, Tuesday Night Modern style deck. Just have some fun. My question for you, though, is can we fit some Ojutai's Exemplars in here, please?
I don't know what that card does.
Yeah, but that was what people thought was the like alternate to Monastery Mentor when originally trying.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the 4/4?
Yeah, it's the 4-mana, like...
I know
that
one.
And it has like 3 different prowess abilities, modes, I think. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah, it was not good, but it was fun.
Can't get it back with Helping Hand.
No.
That's a problem.
Sweet. These are some good looking decks. Thanks for sharing them. I kind of want to play two of them. So
good start.
Two out of three ones. Ain't bad. Yeah. I want to play the Prowess deck, and I want to play the Zombie Mentor.
There you go.
I think the Zombie Mentor deck is mostly playable on Explorer.
That would require me reinvesting in Arena cards.
That is a good question. I think most of this is.
I'll also note that the deck, as your list, Devin, is 94 tickets on Moto.
Super cheap.
That's a good price.
I think it's like $50 for me to finish this deck in paper. I'm not going to do it, but
how much are drill elves in paper?
They look like about $5.
Okay, that's not bad.
Do you have 4 Artakar Wastes I can borrow?
For this deck or just for something? I don't know if I'm going to give them to you for this deck, but
okay.
I have a lot of Artakar Wastes. Sweet, actually, yeah,
great. I'll hit you up later.
I have 3 Artakar Wastes, but they're full art, so I'm not putting them in the mail. They're too pretty.
Yeah,
they're too pretty. And that is how I'm going to wrap up this week's show. If you haven't yet, make sure you subscribe to Doomwake on twitch.tv/Doomwake. The O's are zeros. Everybody knows. It's really cool that he did that. You can also subscribe to us, our podcast, The Dive Down, wherever podcasts are served. And maybe when you do, you'll open a booster pack with the card you want in it. And all I'll say is the two are related. That's all I'm going to say. Correlation is causation. If you use Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave us a rating and review. We love those. We read them. If you'd like to submit a question to us, you can reach out on Twitter at The Dive Down, all one word, or email thedivedown@gmail.com. You can support us at our Patreon at patreon.com/thedivedown. You can also check out our store at thedivedown.com/store. We don't sell magic cards, but I think we should.
I've got some right here to sell.
Yeah, Dave has a lot of extra magic cards, and he doesn't know how to get rid of them.
Yeah, I have a foil showcase Rakdos the Muscle, if anybody's interested in that. Nobody is.
No one's interested in your muscles, Dave. Head over to heavyplay.com to get some incredible deck and dice boxes and playmats and sleeves. They've got the Equipmax system. They've got cool curved edges. They're ergonomic, they're magnetic, and they're 10% off when you use the promo code TheDiveDown2024. Shout out to Mana Traders for sponsoring The Dive Down. Episodes like this would not be possible without Mana Traders. They've got the cards. We rent them. You can too. And if you use promo code TheDiveDown_K4L, all one word, you'll get 10% off your first 2 months of renting Magic Online cards. As always, special thanks to the bands Noor and Spaceblood for letting us use their music. And until next week, get out there and have fun with new cards, everybody.
Doesn't matter what comes, Mentos better with life. With Mentos fresh and full of life, nothing gets to you. Staying fresh, staying cool. With Mentos fresh and full of life, fresh goes better with Mentos fresher. Mentos fresh and full of life. Mentos, the fresh maker.